Hello there and welcome to the A to D talk show, where we talk about controversial issues and deliberate on them. We believe that the world is like a coin and it is best to see both sides of it. So come on, join us as we agree to disagree.
Good day everyone, those listening online through the podcast platform and those here with us. Good day, everyone. And how has the year been? Hope we're enjoying ourselves. I hope we're achieving our goals. Today, we are going to be talking about who to blame. Current leaders or colonial masters. And now this is a very important topic because last week, we spoke about Africa's history, the lesson for the future. Today, we're going to talk about who to blame. We have seen the catastrophic and chaotic society we are in. Who are we to throw this blame on? Are we going to blame the current leaders? Are we going to hold them accountable for the kind of society we have today? Or are we going to hold the people who came here, as our colonial masters who came years ago? Joining me to speak on this is Hamid. And Hamid is going to, we're going to have a conversation about it. This is not an academic conversation. This is not, we're not here to bring any esoteric knowledge. We're not here to have a conversation. So Hamid, welcome to my show. Thank you for accepting my invitation. And just to kick off immediately, where do you stand on the who to blame? Where are we to blame the colonial masters, or are we to blame our current leaders?
Okay, thank you, Kideshi, for having me. So, for me, right, the conversation is about strategy in terms of how to look at our future going, and how our future leaders are going to take on the mantle of leadership. So, answering that question in particular, it's like giving the mantle, anybody that takes the mantle of leadership, a sort of insight into how to tackle some of the real problems they're going to face. So to give a short answer, who to blame for our development, current leaders or colonizers, for me is current leaders. Now, I'm not saying this just to say because no, colonizers have zero influence or zero blame to take. I'm saying it because at the end of the day, it is the responsibility of our leaders to identify some of the things I'm going to be speaking about in terms of the blame that falls on the colonizers and have the ability to navigate around those things and help our people and our country and our continent to grow forward. So I would say the blame falls squarely on the current leaders. However, the colonizers have a direct influence and blame as well as where we are today.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. I also have such stakes that we as a country are not we are not the first or we are not the only group of people that have been colonized before. Right? So, and we see countries like America that was colonized by Great Britain. We see Australia, we see Vietnam that was colonized by China. So we see these countries, and when we look at them today, we can see development. So in what areas, like, for example, we spoke last week on the Berlin Conference, and we spoke about how colonial masters came here. Now, in what sense, exactly, in what structural sense can we say, okay, this is what if our leaders can do or should have done, then we would have had a better society. But before we even talk on that, I want you to also speak a little bit on the influence, the bad influence that our colonial masters brought to the floor. Even though we spoke about it in the former episode, but you can just highlight on it, then go to the irresponsibilities of our current leaders and how them taking on responsibility can change the country for good.
Yeah, so just to piggyback on the point we made last week, if you were here, it was a great conversation. And what was very clear in that conversation is that what led the colonization of Africa and other regions was purely a material acquisition colonization. Mm-hmm. The colonial powers were looking for materials to help build their country. Mm-hmm. Now, let's look at how did they do this? How, why? Because the very important point that was made last week was that our history for Africans begins as slave trade. We were told that somehow it's like Africa began existing when slave trade happened.
Yeah.
Nothing before that was recorded, nothing before that was preserved to an extent where it becomes like it's the normal conversation amongst everybody on the continent. So if you look before the slave trade, the African continent was a thriving empire. We had the Nubians, we have the Malians, we have a lot of empires that coexisted. They trade with all over the world. At some point in the 14th century, as was mentioned, Somali had the most active port in the world in the 14th century because of all the product that was being moved from Africa to elsewhere. Now, how did these people come in and why did they need to colonize us? At some point, if you look at the tea wars, one of the main reasons, the opium wars to China is the fact that trade needed trade and barter. It wasn't like just printing currency at that time. You needed to print, you needed to actually provide valuable goods so that people will give you something that you need. At the time, they needed the tea from China and they were offering them herbs. At some point when they said that the herbs, you didn't want to trade in those herbs anymore, they went in and colonized them. The same similar stories you find in Africa where they were dealing, were trading with empires, with groups, with people. And at some point when they realized that you could not fund or pay all the resources that they needed, then they just turned around and just started conquering them. Why? What gave them that edge? It's the gunpowder that they found at that point. That was when God gave them the real edge to really come in and take everyone out, everywhere that stood in there, really took them out. While they were busy battling with spears and arrows, they have gunpowder that could kill in an instant.
Yeah.
Now, that was a real game changer. Now, at some point, people, the world reached on, people were tired, there was more connection, more communication, technology had advanced, so there was, it wasn't possible anymore to, you know, use propaganda to keep people in the dark. Everybody was more informed. There was more question about what's going on here, what's going on there. And it was no longer possible for them to keep maintaining those powers they had.
Mm.
Now, when they started to exit, if you observe a lot of countries where they left, you notice that there's a pattern of where they used minorities to lead and they left the country in the hands of the majority. So, you know, obviously there were tribes in every colony they had.
Yeah.
And also a very important point that we need to add to this conversation right now is that the concept of countries as it exists today started as a post-World War I phenomenon. It did not exist before World War I. Things that we call a country didn't exist. They were empires. This empire had its control from this place to that place. Yeah. Every small place, like the further you go, you have less control and they will only use indirect rule to control those people and put them under their umbrella.
Yeah.
Now, you know, after the World War I, that was when the Ottoman Empire was completely demolished. You know, even the Russian Empire also was going through a lot of internal turbulence. Then the Germans,
even the Austrian Empire,
the Austria-Hungarian Empire, that was the main reason why the whole World War started. That was when they all were crushed. Yeah. They were done for, and now that was when they ushered the new age of countries, yeah, where they went, sat back, designed, and just found a map, draw a line, and say, this is a country. Regardless of what kind of relationship existed between these two people,
yeah,
or the several groups you put under a certain boundary to call this is a country.
Yeah, you see.
When they went in.
Sorry to cut you short, but one of the important things that I find very strange about the making of countries in Africa,
yeah, and,
you know, countries in other part of the world, like America. There was a point in America when Texas wasn't considered as a part of America.
Yeah.
See the Soviet Union when the when after they lost their wars and when they started breaking off apart, they had they formed Ukraine and some other countries. You see, one of the, like we spoke about this last week, the making of countries in Africa was detected by the Europeans. They sat down and they just drew lines, you know, they just took African map and they started drawing lines, you know, say, okay, England, UK, you take this, France, you take this, Germany, you take here. And they didn't consider the culture. Now, I agree. But we are in this already. We are here already. And the truth is, me and you can agree that we have better days in the past, especially for Nigeria.
Yeah.
We have better days in the past for so many African countries. Yes, they came. Yes, they were probably, we can all agree that they were greedy. They didn't care about the country. They didn't care about what we, how we did. Well, true. But we fought for independence. We got independence. We are independent. We should be independent. But we see where we are today. We are a sovereign country. We have sovereign countries in Africa. So most times especially people who just think that Africa's history started from slavery. When we look at the entire growth of Africa, we see a continent that was thriving on its own, with no influence of Europeans. Europeans came in, did what they did. Well, when they were leaving, some of them in good faith, the country was doing well. We had good universities in this country. There were a few universities in Nigeria, but there are good universities. And then we got our independence. For Nigeria, we got it in 1960. Most African countries got it around that time. And right now, the continent is in total mayhem. Just to make a last point before I allow, so you can buttress my point and make your own opinions. Of all, think about it, and this gives me so much concern. Of all the African countries that the Europeans left, Europeans did not totally leave South Africa. Totally. Yeah. And see where South Africa is today. So I think myself, is South Africa what it is today because of the factor of the white man, or is it just that they had good government? But again, you look at Haiti. Haiti is in Central Africa, Central America.
Yeah.
And they're not even doing well. That's a black country too. They're not even doing well. So it just sometimes is mind-boggling, sometimes I just feel discombobulated as to how tie this curve of success and failure in the whole African history, in the whole African story.
Yeah. So I think let me try and address this point in this format. Mm-hmm. I think it's important that we look at this issue as not from a point of despair, but from a point of hope. Obviously, we're having this conversation because we believe that we do have what it takes to get to where we need to be.
True.
Now, the first point of that, to make this argument, is the fact that we existed before they came. We were thriving before they came. We were developed as developed would mean at that point in time, because, you know, development is relative to the time you are living in. At that point in time, we were developed. We had systems. We had institutions that worked. So we did it. We can do it again.
True.
Now, the second point is, if you look at... let's take a deep dive into like America, Australia, and the rest, and see what exactly are they, how are they like. Now, it's important to also note that for America, a country like America, they were not really natives that developed the country. They were colonies. You know, even the independence of America was colonies wanting independence from the British. It wasn't it was the natives that drove the big Europeans out. No, it was the Europeans that had the experience from Europe, now settled in America, decided that we don't want the British here anymore. We want to be controlling ourselves. So really, they were Europeans that settled in America. So it wasn't like it was the Indians, you know, to use the word, that lived in native Americans that lived there, that went to grow America to what it is. Not that I'm saying they can't. I'm not saying that they also had the help from that technology to continue from where they stopped. The same thing as Australia. They have the their own natives that live out in Australia, but are not the one in dominance today.
True.
That's point number one. And saying that the fact that that technology that was used was transferred and continued to be built in that place, moved from Europe to America. Now, I want to take a quick detour. And I just want to explain, this is a phenomenon that Malcolm Gladwell called desirable difficulty in his book, Good David and Goliath. Now, basically desirable difficulty is that this is a disadvantage that you have that pushes you to be better, to be excel, to be the best in what you do. And he used dyslexia, the reading defects that people have, to where people that have dyslexia were able to thrive in the industry. Now, let's look at what are the sort of the difficulties that some of these countries have that push them to move to where they were. Let's look at Europe. You're looking at a place where they had winter for maybe like half of the year. They were in extreme cold, so they needed to survive. It meant if they didn't survive, if they didn't find a way to go through winter, they were not going to make it to the next year.
True.
So things like having heat source and shelter and all these things are crucial for them, which is why they were looking for power and, you know, heat source, which is why oil was very, very lucrative for them. Wheel oil, palm oil, and all the rest. Now, also, you can quickly see how the need for all the heat translated to the development of gunpowder. You can see how it went.
True.
Now, let's come back to Africa. What are the difficulties that we have compared to all other parts of the world? None. We don't have the sort of environmental challenges that they do that pushes them to go and get ahead of the curve. It's really about survival for them. It's not just about, we need to have a nice car that can move in the winter. No. Exactly. If they don't have a car that has, you know, the radiator technology to help defrost the water in the radiator, they are going to get stuck in an avalanche somewhere and they are dying. So it's really about survival. We don't have that here. We don't have that inner drive that means if you don't survive, if you don't innovate, you don't survive. We don't have that. Now, if you look at Africa, if we were to be left alone without any competition, without any, you know, someone trying to siphon our resources, we'll be fine. We'll be able to live in small huts. We don't need all that. We don't have, you know, extreme weather where we need to have a big house, things like that, or even central heating system. You don't need all that. Our environment is fine. But because we are in a world where it's now a global village, today we are looking at Africa and we can clearly see what's happening in America or in Australia. So you feel the need to be where they are today. And even with the issue of technology and info technology has made it even a lot more, you know, inclusive, the need to move forward a lot more dire. Now, let's take a deeper look into what that translates for Africa.
We try to keep this in 30 minutes. We have like approximately 10
minutes. 12 minutes to go. Yeah. Okay. Let me just make this quick point, which is really the point I'm trying to make. The main point of this whole conversation for me is this. What we do here in Africa, right, is we are trying to solve problems that are not domiciled to us.
True.
Rather than develop a community for that community, so you can solve, you're solving the problem of that community. You're solving problems that people that come to live there will want to come and live there. Not the people that live already there to thrive. So you have projects like maybe rail lines for travel, airports for a community that cannot even afford to even fly on a plane. What are you doing? Why do they need an airport there? Again, I'm not an expert. I'm just giving my own opinion. I'm thinking, okay, probably if a family community that moves a lot of goods probably will benefit more from warehousing technology, you know, transport technology, not things that they cannot afford.
Sure.
So for me, looking at the development, is going to have to be that. Look at development from the point of view of growing internally, growing from what we have to what we need.
True.
There needs to be that, you know, flow of growth, that we're growing from what we know. Before we're using sticks, We now go to using ions. We now go to using engines. You can't just jump to the engines before you even understand why we need the engines in the first place. So for me, that's the trajectory for growth is really not there for us here in Africa. And this is the, really the key point of colonization for that. What still happens today, where things that are African in origin are made to look inferior. We feel like everything that is African is not as, you know, as advanced as what is South African. Ankara fabrics is seen as exotic. No, it's not okay to be wearing Ankara for, you know, official occasions. It has to be, you know, it's a traditional attire. What do you mean by traditional? Traditional is who we are. It shouldn't be what's like traditional as far as we are concerned. Traditional is what they use in their lands, not what we use here. We are, this is who we are. Don't call it traditional. This is who we, this is us. That colonization mentality still exists. They use that to make us feel like who we are is not enough. We need to be them.
I'm telling
you. We need to understand that we have to be who we are so we can grow where we are.
Exactly.
So we can exist with them on a level playing field. But if we keep, it's really going to leave us in a place where, you know, we are dealing with things like, for example, now, a steam engine or maybe like a radiator that they will use for their houses. What would we need a radiator in a house right now in Africa? You don't have...
Hello? Hamid? 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 I think we lost Hamid. I think we lost him. So I think we lost him for some reasons. So while we wait for him to come back, just to continue on his point, right? It's just ridiculous, actually, because if you think about the suit and tie is a traditional wear somewhere in Britain. In Europe, you think about white wedding, and I don't know why that isn't called a white wedding, but we think about white wedding, what we call white wedding here in Africa, is traditional marriage, is actually traditional marriage in Europe. But we move from doing traditional marriage, which is compulsory, to doing white wedding, which is even more compulsory. And we begin to wonder why. Why do we even have to make such... These people, the idea of suits, wearing jackets, like suit and trousers, was because of winter, because of cold. That's where, this is where the idea of wearing suits came from. But guess what? That we wear and pass. We wear it more than any other, even, I think it is even compulsory to wear suits and, you know, in Nigeria, more than some Western countries or some European countries. And for what reason? For example, he was talking about we still have the colonial masters, we still prioritize colonial masters' techniques, methodologies, and tools more than ours. True, we saw the same thing during this pandemic. The pandemic started sometime in January. By May, June, people, Madagascar came out and said, well, we have something. I mean, this is not a vaccine, but this is a cure. No, we're not taking it to, it is Africa, we're not taking it, we can't take it. Okay. Madagascar went back to their shell. Someone came out from Lagos, Nigeria. I think it was a king or an Oba, a traditional ruler. I said, okay, they have a herbal medicine that could help. They said, no, we're not doing it. People across Africa came out with herbal therapeutics. We all said no to it. But guess what happened? The vaccine came out, and Africa is the last set of countries to get the vaccine. And we're all complaining. Oh, if you guys want to do testing, you will come to Africa. But now it's time to share it. You don't want to go. But we had 3, 4, 5, 6 people from Africa that came out to say that, see, we have something that works against this vaccine and against this virus. We didn't appreciate it. Louis Vuitton, just in case you don't know, Louis Vuitton, they get their leather from Kano, Nigeria. They buy their leather from Nigeria. One of the best cotton cotton materials you can get, you find them in Zimbabwe. But that leather, that bag you want to buy, that shoe you want to buy, if it does not have LV on it, that is Louis Vuitton badge, it is not original. So we need to begin to internalize our ourselves, and we need to begin to internalize what we have. Yeah. Hamid, I think Hamid is going to join us soon. Hamid?
Yeah, hello, sorry, my network just went off completely.
Yeah, no problem.
So sorry, given that we have 5 minutes, I just want to make this one last point.
Yeah.
So today we visited the World Museum, the National War Museum in Umuahia. And if you have the opportunity, please do go and visit it. And for me, it came to life the phenomenon of desirable difficulty. What we saw there, you know, the kind of innovations and the kind of technology that we saw that the Biafrans had at the time, when they really didn't have any option, they had to survive.
True.
When they didn't have the option, they did things that really are amazing for that time. And even today, looking back at it, you see that these are things that you can't believe were made in Nigeria.
True.
So we have the capacity to do that. And it's just that we have to understand that obviously we're not going to put ourselves in a worse situation just for us to grow or develop. We can't do that. Mm-hmm. We can't wish that we have volcanoes here in Africa so that we can do something to help ourselves. So we have to, on our own, put in that idea, that the mentality that we have to innovate to survive. Survival is not just about making money or, you know, just making a living. It's more than that. When you're building for legacies, you're building for generations to come. We're not just building for, okay, I need to build a big house today. No. You're thinking, I need to build a community for the people in the next 10, 20 years to come. So I think that's going to be really key if you want to develop where we are. And wherever you find yourself, you can develop that point. So we can come together at the end of the day and see that individually, we've contributed to making this whole continent into what it can be and it should be.
Yeah. Thank you, Hamid. If anyone wants to contribute, I'll give you like 3-4 minutes while I still make some points. I mean, I agree with you. You know, when your network took you out, I also spoke a little bit about how we want, if it's not white, then it's not right. You know what I mean? If it's not a white man that made it, then it's not what it is. And our leaders have issues. We have serious issues. We have serious leadership issues in this continent. You see what happened in Uganda, the election. You see how our leaders are so unscrupulous in their relationship, in the international relationship. They care more about their pockets. You see China coming to give us money for reasons that, to me, are not necessary. Late last year, Nigeria went to borrow $1.2 billion from Brazil for agricultural produce. We have debts. We have debt that they are keeping for who? And these people are old leaders. So while I am in support of us saying, you know, colonial masters did us wrong, colonial masters did us this, but see, we need to sit back 60 years. It took China 40 years to take 800 million people out of poverty. 800 million. They call it the Chinese economic miracle. You can go and read about it. It took them only 40 years to get 800 million people out of poverty. We spoke about this last week too. And it just tells you how ridiculous and how selfish and unscrupulous our leaders are today. So I really find it hard to make sense of the policies we have in this country, we have in this continent, and how these policies are deleterious to our society and to the people. And like I said, leaders are supposed to protect, or presidents and governors are supposed to protect their citizens first. So it's weird. It's strange and how of how we had our glory past, and today it's where we are today. As do you know how easy it is to generate energy? We don't have 24-hour light in this country in 2021 or the 21st century. So I blame our leaders more than I blame the colonial masters. Yes, they came, they did what they did, and they're out. Fine. The Vietnam War was one of the worst wars in Europe and the Europe Asian war time. They suffered communism and all forms of dictatorial form of government. But see how they're coming back. So since someone's asking a question, if you have questions to ask, you can ask. I don't think anyone is asking. But we in this forum, we try to open up our minds. Like I said, this is not to give any academic, we're not giving you any academic theory, or we're not telling you, we're not giving you thesis. We're not trying to spoil your mind, to open your mind to critical thinking. That's the point we're trying to make here. So Hamid, can you just give us a minute, just 1 minute, or just tell us, wrap up your point and everything you would summarize your point in just 30 seconds, 1 minute, so we can wrap this up.
Yes. Development should be grassroots, from the grassroots, develop for your community. True. And in the spirit of opening our minds, we are going to have a discussion about democracy.
True.
I want us to just go back and think. Let's look at communities, countries that went to where they are. Look at India, look at China, that were not democratic in nature. Why did they grow? What is the factor driving that growth? Mm-hmm. Obviously, we can't. There's always going to be issue of human rights abuses.
Yeah.
What are the human rights abuses that are happening in democratic countries today? Are they none, or are they better hidden than the rest of the world? So think about this in terms of democracy. We've been fed this notion that there's one path to growth.
Yeah.
We have to delusion ourselves from that. Understand what are the factors that we need to, what are the things that we need to protect, or what are the things that have become spoon-fed to us and have been forced down our truth. So let's think about what these things mean to us, what it means, and how it can translate to development for us. So that's my last point before we come back again.
Thank you very much, Hamid. Thank you very much. And thank you all for listening. I hope you're having a wonderful week, and I hope you're having a wonderful day. Next week, we're going to be talking about a very crucial topic. Hamid has already given us a hint on it. Democracy and Africa, a failed experiment with a question mark. So the topic is posed as a question. So I hope we come together to think, to talk, to have a conversation about the actual intent of democracy and how it has helped us. But for now, digest this one, and I hope to see you next week. Once again, I just want to thank you, Hamid, for coming on my show. And you're going to be here next week with someone else from South Africa. We're having a guest from South Africa. Thank you very much for making out your time. Thank you very much for speaking to us. And thank you all for being here. Next week, we'll meet. And until then, may the Lord keep us. Good night.
Thank you very much, Kelly, for having me. Good night.
Oh.